This is Coach Lee, and you're listening to The Door Report.
At Vanderbilt, it's Tim Corbin and the Vandy Boys, Jerry Stackhouse on the hardwood, and Clark Lee on the gridiron. Nashville, it's time to sit back, relax, grab a cold one, and enjoy the show. The Music City is our state, and West End is where we rock. You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who bleed black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome back into The Door Report, episode 235 on a beautiful September 4th Labor Day afternoon, 4 o'clock. As always here at The Door Report, we are presented by Corey Perkins of Parks Realty. If you are a first-time home buyer or looking to move homes, Corey Perkins is your man. You can reach out to Corey via phone call or text at 615-987-8623, or you can reach out to Corey via email at coreyperkins@realtracks.com. Realtracks spelled realtracs.com. Again, that phone number for Corey is 615-987-8623. Shout out to Corey Perkins of Parks Realty for the continued support of The Door Report and all things black and gold here. Trevor, we have a brief but loaded recap episode here for Alabama A&M and the Doors moving to 2-0. We'll go through the box score, go through the key plays. We're fixing and working on the format here of the recap episodes as Phoebe makes her first appearance. We're working on the format
Death
here.
Death and taxes.
Death and taxes and Phoebe jumping into the shot. But we're working on the format here, so it's not as dull of a recap running through every single drive. So we're going to be calling that key plays of the game, running through the stats there in the box score. And then, as always, we'll get to me and Trevor's key takeaways of the game, our three main takeaways. So, Trevor, how are you feeling after the 2-0 start in that Alabama A&M game?
I'm the eternal optimist, so I think I'm feeling a little bit better than everybody else. But clearly still a sloppy game. Things obviously need to get worked on. Still some question marks going into Wake Forest. I think overall, if I could just summarize my thoughts, is yeah, it was a sloppy game, but I think the second half was a good job. They did a good job at building momentum going into that Wake Forest game, which is the most important game of the season, I think.
I mean, the main complaint after the Hawaii game was that Vanderbilt did a very poor job of closing that game and stepping on the throat of their opponent in the Hawaii game after going up 35-14 in the fourth quarter. Vanderbilt was up 12-3 after the first half. Going into that second half, Vanderbilt stomped on Alabama A&M and absolutely dominated that second half outside of one play that we'll get to in the full recap. But before we get to that and much more, don't forget to follow The Door Report on Twitter and Instagram at The Door Report, all one word, or like us on Facebook. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Emphasis, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes. It's now time for breaking news.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Trevor, it's time to get into it. But there was one part of that little spiel that we always do right before the first ad break in the breaking news segment that's about leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And we requested last weekend, or last podcast, that listeners to TDR go on and leave some entertaining reviews on iTunes. And the boys delivered. All right, we got some good ones here. We just now...
This is our first time looking at
them. First time looking at them, so we just pulled them up literally right now, so this is live. I have not read through these, so I'm just going to read through the first four, and then we'll continue to read these go throughout the season. Leave reviews, please. Those 5 stars help us out a ton, and they're very, very entertaining to read once Apple actually approves them and posts them to the podcast. So the first one, you don't know what the title is in all capital letters, Trevor?
Hit me.
Sorry, Sadie. The Doors need me.
Is it really?
You know who? You know who that's from?
Who?
Not Chris Lee.
Oh, whoa!
And the first review, this is from Not Chris Lee. This is not us. The review reads, because we promised we would read the best ones, so much more energy and passion than boring pessimist Chris Lee's sham of a podcast.
Shots fired.
The only option for real Vandy fans. We do not endorse that review at TDR. But we are saying,
God, that, emptying the clip on him, baby.
Shots fired. And then the next review from Bex4VU says, get your Vandy fix here. I am a total TDR addict. Will and Trevor bring the energy, enthusiasm, and insight every episode. They are true fans in every sense of the word. I listen to them every day if I could.
Thank you, Bex.
Thank God you can't listen to us every day or you'd be in a mental asylum.
Yeah, you would be in a padded cell.
You would be institutionalized if you could hear the voices that are rattling through my brain every single day. But thank you for the 5-star review.
I tell you, Bex, what, Will, if these walls could talk, if these walls could say some of the things they've heard in this apartment. It'd
be worse than the hot mic situation that we had, which wasn't bad. Next one, I think I know who this is. Longtime listener, tier one listener, Kimpin Ain't Easy.
Dude, the goat. Hey, go Birds, though, Justin.
Title, The World is Yours. This pod has always been great. Ever since they've gone to the recent lineup with Will and Trevor hosting, it's become the NWO and taking over the world.
Let's go. Shout out to my wrestling boys out
Will
there.
Is Hollywood Hulk Hogan, and Trevor is Macho Man. Yeah. NWO for life. TDR for life, baby.
NWO for life, baby.
Thank you, Kippin Ain't Easy. Thank you, Justin. Shout out. Tier one listener, day one listener. Dog.
Maybe tier one of tier one. Justin, tier one of tier one.
Oh, yeah. He's tier one.
He is the tier one.
Yeah, he is the tier one. Absolute dog, day one, A1. Next up, we've got a couple more. I'll read two more here, and then we'll save anything else we have for the next week. But this just says, and the title's pretty good, from Kustich. I don't know how to pronounce that. Kustich. Thank you for the 5 stars. Says Vandy by Fitty. Great title. He says, great pod. Guys actually know what they're talking about. Be prepared for cat interruptions once in a while.
Phoebe, you got anything to say for yourself again?
Nothing.
She's just smelling
nothing.
The mic.
Nothing.
Not
to
a
say.
Not a coherent thought behind those eyes.
He then goes on to say, interruptions once in a while. LOL. Anchor down. Thank you, Kustich. Thank you for the five stars. And the last one, I think I know who this is, but we'll save them the despair and being made fun of for this name that they have, the Lot 2 Lizard.
Oh, I know who that is.
I don't want to read this one.
Is the review not good?
It's Hold good. On. It's 5 stars. It says TDR, a super produced podcast by a man who looks like he lives in a fraternity house still at 27. Ow. And his friend who got granted a Make-A-Wish talk show about Vandy sports to people. Only listen if prepared for Trevor to know how to use levels in a mic or use an inside voice. After Saturday, I'm just hoping he's wearing pants under that table.
Jeez. What a review.
So thank you for the 5 stars. I'm also 26, not 27.
Hey, we'll dox you.
I'm a youngin' still, all right? I'm still in the true mid-20s, not mid to late yet. We got a few more months, so I'm not taking that
regret.
Do you
think he knows what that username means?
I don't know if he knows what a lot lizard is. But
I don't think he knows.
But whoever left that review, look up what a lot lizard is, since you decided to hate on the boys just then. But look up lot lizard. That's how this podcast begins. But, Trevor, we do have a game to recap. Vanderbilt beats the Alabama A&M Bulldogs, their FCS opponent this season, 47-13, moving the Commodores to 2-0 on the season, first place in the SEC East, as things should be. Everything is right with the world.
Just as the good Lord intended.
The good and bad is balanced. The doors are on top as God intended. But Vanderbilt pulled away in the second half against an outmanned and outgunned Alabama A&M football team. Trevor, I want to run through the box score first, but I do want to hear some initial kind of gut reaction to the game that we saw on Saturday.
Gut reaction is the first quarter was absolutely abysmal. The first half was absolutely abysmal. There was nothing to be excited about. It was a disaster, and at halftime, I was in an awful place. Second half started out okay on offense, not great on defense, really, really bad. Sorry, I'm about to burp into the mic. Hold on, boys.
Got those Diet Cokes flowing.
Yeah, the Diet Coke is absolutely kicking me in the balls right now. I thought second half, they obviously looked much better. It sort of looked like they realized that they were the better team and just decided to pour it on them. So that's encouraging. I think more than anything, even though it was a sloppy game, my takeaway is that second half is a really good way to build momentum going into Wake Forest. Because if it was a sloppy game all the way through, then that Wake Forest game is looking more miserable than it might already be.
Without the crisp second half outside of one defensive play, just defensive lapse that happened, and when we get to the detailed key plays of the game, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. That second half brought me back. I had to go sit up alone in the top of Section A after that first half because that was not the performance that me and you either expected. Nope. In the first half. Not crisp. Vanderbilt definitely looked like they were not fully mentally in the game. Uh-huh. I mean, it happens. Locker room dynamics. We're not oblivious to these are college football players. These are not professional football players. This is college age students. And it's harder to get dialed in. As someone that even played high school sports, it's harder to get dialed in for an opponent like Alabama A&M than to get dialed in to Wake Forest. Because at the end of the day, right or wrong, coaches would never say it. The Vanderbilt players know that if they turn it on, theoretically, they could pull away. But the final score for the Doors, 47-13. Trevor, remind the people what our predictions were for the game.
Mine was 17-16.
That was 17-6, I think. Or was it
maybe 17? I'm going to be honest, bro. I do not remember.
What was your prediction before?
My real prediction, I think, was something close.
Yeah, it was. Actually,
I think it was like 43-10.
Yeah, it was actually
like
pretty
that.
Close. And I think mine was 55-6. Not too bad.
No,
not too bad. Decent. Yeah, decently close. And we also need to investigate Alabama A&M.
Yes.
We need to touch on this, and then we'll get into the box score and the key plays of the game. But the line on this game was minus 35, minus 36, mm-hmm. somewhere in there.
Offshore was like minus 38.
Yeah, yeah, somewhere in there. Vanderbilt was up 47-10 late in this game, and Alabama A&M decided to kick a field goal to cover the spread. Investigate Alabama A&M. I'm not blaming them. I mean, if they put some money on themselves plus 36, all power to you, brother. I mean, double that money that Vanderbilt's paying you, whatever it is. But why else would you kick the field goal there at the end of the game other than to cover that spread?
That made no sense. We were watching the game, and we were sitting next to Joseph West, who had Vanderbilt minus 35.5. And shout out to Big Joe. I thought he was going to jump off the top of First Bank Stadium. He he was in a really bad spot.
Well, it's so I wouldn't be saying this if theoretically Vanderbilt was up like 36-0 and Alabama A&M decided to kick, cover the spread, but to put points on the board for the first time, or even if Vanderbilt was sitting there like 43-7. I could see wanting to get into double digits. It was already 47-10. It doesn't even like feel better or look better or do anything. It just made no sense besides to cover the spread. So I just had to bring that up early. But Trevor, I'm going to run through the box score here for Vanderbilt, and then I'm going to ask you what stands out in your mind. But
beautiful.
Vanderbilt's passing game, A.J. Swan, disappointing performance, 15 of 29 for 194, two touchdowns, one pick, and a 28.4 QBR.
Yeah.
Not the strongest showing from A.J. But then number eight, the boy.
Our beautiful boy.
Ken Seals with a perfect QBR, a 100.0 QBR.
That's our boy.
Ken Seals, 2 for 2 for 52 yards and a tutty. Dog. Dog.
Hey, me and the boys in Section F started a Ken Seals chant whenever he went in, and it was pretty electric. I'm not going to lie. It doesn't get more gritty than a Ken Seals chant.
Dude.
I would just go, Ken, and they go, Seals. Ken Seals.
I loved seeing. So I'm going to actually break it up and ask your opinion on performances in between each position group, because okay. I think that'll break it up a little bit more. Seeing Ken Seals get in the game and actually seeing them give him the opportunity to throw the football and not just hand it off. Damn, that felt good.
It did.
It felt good to see a guy that is stuck with this program, stuck through seeing himself lose his starting job and continued to be a leader and a mentor on this team, despite personal issues that he does have going on off the field. I mean, it's hard, regardless of if you're a Vanderbilt fan, regardless of if you're an SEC fan, regardless of if you're a fan of any team, to not root for a guy like Ken Seals.
Yep.
I mean, that was awesome to see. A perfect QBR. Love to see him get that opportunity. But
you know what?
I want to keep the positive vibes first. How was that? I know you led the chant, but I'll
say this too. I'm not going to name his name, but there's somebody who said that us on the pod, we glaze Ken Seals too much. You know who you are, and you're a bozo. Stop listening to the pod. I don't want you as a listener. Yep. This is a Ken Seals only pod. This is the Ken Seals fan club. We love Ken Seals. If you hate Ken Seals, you hate Vanderbilt. You're a bozo. Stop listening.
If you hate Ken Seals, you hate guys with grit.
Yeah, yeah. Just go ahead and just say you don't have grit.
In the modern era of transfer and just rent and sign one-year contracts and not build anything, not growth, go through any growing pains and just go to an easier place where there's easier playing time and easier wins and easier money, like, Ken Seals is a fucking dog. All right. He does not get enough credit.
No.
It's the other way.
Exactly.
Other media outlets for Vanderbilt should be covering him more.
Yep.
That he stayed to be a solid backup and mentor a more talented quarterback and stayed to help build something.
Yep.
Instead of the modern era of being a lazy bum and renting and just hopping from program to program. So I'm going to talk about Ken Seals more now.
Yeah, we're about to talk about Ken Seals for 30 minutes.
I'm about to talk about how well he backed up the quarterback, even if he doesn't step on the field just because
of
that.
If you have anything bad to say about Ken Seals, you're a bozo and you need to get on some gridosterone.
Yeah, come to Lot 2 and talk to me about how Ken Seals is talked about too much on TDR, and we'll have a discussion.
Yeah.
But Trevor, there was another quarterback that threw 29 passes and only completed 15 and had a 28.4 QBR. How do you feel about A.J. Swan's performance, and does it give you concern moving forward on the season?
To answer your first question, yeah, it was really bad, particularly the first half. He was straight up awful. Probably his worst half of football in his career. Does it scare me? No. I mean, people forget that's like, what, his seventh game starting? Like, you got to. I mean, yeah, it was ugly. Yes, the interception in the end zone is unacceptable, but good Lord, cut the kid some slack, man. You know what I mean?
He's a true sophomore. I think it's lost because he does look so in charge, and he looks like he belongs in an SEC backfield as the quarterback, that he's a true sophomore, and he was hurt a majority of last season and did not start a majority of the games last season. He has a lot of room to grow
yep.
in decision-making, but all the tools are there. Same thing you just said, Trevor. Was it a bad performance? Yes. Did he miss some throws? Yes. Did he make some bad decisions? Yes. Does that concern me for the rest of the season and the rest of his career? No. I mean, everything that I saw in that Alabama A&M game, he made some poor decisions. This is the game you want to make mistakes to get them on film.
That's a great point.
To not make them again. I guarantee that coaching staff is going to point out the mistakes he made in the red zone specifically, and this is the game to learn from them.
That's a great point.
And a 47-13 victory over an FCS opponent. So it doesn't give me concern. But I did see some talk on specifically the 24/7 message boards about real concern with his performance.
Oh, I want to talk about this.
Man, that bothered me a little bit.
And dude, here's the thing. And me and Will talked about this before we even hit record on the pod. Yes, does he force some throws? Is his decision-making lacking sometimes? Yes, but he's a true sophomore that has started 7 games. I don't know how you can watch AJ Swan. I almost called him AJ. I almost called him AJ Seals.
Oh, there
I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, I'm going to talk about Ken Seals more, bozos. I don't know how you can look at some of the throws and some of the plays he makes and not get excited about him. The upside that this kid has is legitimately something we have not seen in a quarterback since. This isn't me saying this. There are people who are very deep into Vandy athletics who have said we have not seen somebody like this since Jay Cutler. That is not me saying that. That is people who get paid to write about Vandy.
The only other, so I found an old article, and then we'll get to the running back stats here because there's some more stuff I do want to talk about, and we don't want to get too in detail and take away from our three keys. But I found an old article that I had written when AJ Swan committed, and my comparison to AJ Swan was Jordan Rodgers, because I didn't think I could say Jay Cutler were my two comparisons. And yeah. I think a hybrid of Jordan Rodgers and Jay Cutler is AJ Swan's style. And that's a compliment. Jordan Rodgers is probably, and this is not taking away from Kyle Shurmur in any way, probably Jordan Rodgers and Jay Cutler were the two most dynamic throwing quarterbacks that Vanderbilt has had since the turn of the century. Throwing quarterbacks. Chris Nixon was dynamic with his legs, but he was not a great thrower.
What Taylor was a good thrower.
I said since the turn of the century.
Since the turn of the century. I thought it was like the 1900s.
No, that's why I added that in. Not the turn of the millennium.
Either way, turn of the millennium, turn of the century.
It's same. It would be the same. But Jordan Rodgers had the ability to get outside the pocket and scramble and throw accurate passes. And Jay Cutler was clearly better than Jordan Rodgers. I'm not saying that. And so it's hard to compare a guy that has only had 7 starts, that's a true sophomore, to the best quarterback in modern Vanderbilt football history in Jay Cutler. But this is the closest thing that we have seen. And that's not taking away from Kyle Shurmur, but Kyle Shurmur was a statue inside the pocket. AJ Swan has the ability to get outside the pocket and make unscripted plays.
That's just the way he moves in the pocket.
And that's something that Vanderbilt needs. Vanderbilt doesn't need necessarily a mobile running quarterback. They need a quarterback that can make unscripted plays and unscripted downfield big plays. And that's what AJ Swan brings to the field and brings to this team. So some decision-making in the red zone against Alabama A&M, yeah. Is it a problem? Yeah. Is the coaching staff aware of it? Yeah. So for the rest of the season, it doesn't really affect me. We will know a lot more after this weight game. But getting into the rushing stats, the leading rusher for the game, Cedric Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
12 carries, 87 yards, 2 touchdowns with a long of 27. Excuse me. Second leading rusher, Patrick Smith, 10 carries for 50 yards. Gillespie, 5 carries for 25. AJ, 3 carries for 24 yards and a tutty on the QB sneak. Junior Sherrill, 1 carry for 20 yards. Jaden McGowan, 1 carry for 6. And Walt Taylor, 1 carry for 5 yards. I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to pause here because I want to get into the keys of the game about the backfield. Mm-hmm. But Cedric Alexander was pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, he's part of my key. So we're going to wait on that. We will be discussing Ceddie.
We will discuss that. I didn't think Patrick Smith and Chase Gillespie looked bad by any stretch. I just thought Cedric Alexander stuck out. And I thought the offensive line did a pretty solid job as the game went on of creating running lanes and opportunities for the running
215
backs.
Yards of rushing.
Yeah, overall as a team, 34 carries for 215 and 3 touchdowns with a 6.3 yard per carry average. If that could carry on and continue from this rushing attack for the rest of the season after Alabama A&M, we would all be very, very happy. I'll tell you that. But moving on to the wide receivers in the receiving game, Jaden McGowan, once again, the leading receiver. This box score actually looks very similar to the Hawaii game when you look at just the receivers. But Jaden McGowan, 6 catches for 70 yards. Will Shepard, 6 catches for 62 yards and 2 touchdowns, just like the Hawaii game. Four touchdowns in the year already for Will Shepard, seven away from tying Jordan Matthews' all-time touchdown record at 24?
Yes.
Okay, we don't have a production crew. Phoebe, get on that.
Yep, Phoebe.
But Trevor has confirmed that I was right. Will Shepard, seven touchdowns away from tying Jordan Matthews' all-time touchdown receptions record. Junior Sherrill, one catch for 35 yards. Justin Ball with a really solid play out of that tight end position, one catch for 27 yards. London Humphreys, once again contributing, one catch for 23 yards. Cam Johnson, one catch for 17 yards and a touchdown from the young buck, the freshman tight end, Cam Johnson, who we expect to be a key contributor throughout his Vanderbilt football career. From Ken Seals was that touchdown catch for 17 yards. Then Logan Kyle, once again, popping into this box score, one catch for 12 yards. How did you view the performance from these wide receivers and tight ends?
I mean, it's hard to complain, really. I mean, it's hard. I mean, yeah, there was one bomb to Shep that should have been caught for a touchdown. We're not going to dwell on that because he made it up by hauling in two more. So, I mean, it is what it is. They're everything we thought they would be so far. Tight ends receiving-wise are actually kind of impressive. I think Logan Kyle has really impressed me.
Yeah, Logan Kyle, converted wide receiver. I think he can continue to be utilized in unique ways. His blocking has got to be improved to consistently stay on the field and not just be utilized as a pass-catching tight end. But, I mean, down the road, I think Logan Kyle could be a key contributor. Will Shepard's a cheat code.
He's a deity.
It doesn't matter. This is not about Alabama A&M corners or Hawaii corners. This is for the rest of the season. I don't know how, if you will see Will Shepard with one-on-one coverage inside of the 30-yard line anymore. He's just unguardable one-on-one. His ability to create separation and high point the football is elite. And A.J. Swan, with the ability to communicate and put the ball where Will Shepard is the only guy that can make a play on it, this is a dynamic combo that it doesn't matter if you're playing Alabama A&M or Hawaii or Tennessee or Florida or Georgia. Will Shepard's a problem for a defensive coordinator, mm-hmm. and that's pretty much what I've taken out of these first two games. I'm not getting to my takeaways yet, but as my key takeaway from Hawaii was, these playmakers on the outside are everything that we thought they were. They are as advertised. Kamarion Carter didn't even have a catch. Quincy Skinner Jr. didn't even have a catch this game. Limited in snaps with that lingering hamstring issue, but you didn't even see two out of the four main receivers make a catch. And you still thought the receiving core put up pretty good numbers. So that says something in and of itself.
Shep should have 10 receptions a game. Like, I don't like, people are like, oh, AJ doesn't come off well. Who cares? He's that good. You should force feed him. He should have 20 receptions a game. He's that good. Why? If you're AJ, like, I get it. You do want to spread the ball around. Like, you don't want to stare down targets. But if you have somebody like Will, dude, throw him the ball 20, 30 times a game. Do whatever you need to do to get the ball in his hands. And I don't get people complaining about that. That doesn't make sense to me.
No, and there's another side that he's going to start seeing more double teams, and that's going to open up the rest of the field for playmakers like Kamarion Carter, Jaden McGowan, Quincy Skinner Jr., London Humphreys. I mean, the field is going to open up wide for AJ once teams adapt to understanding that we do not have a single player that can guard this guy. So even if his targets do decrease and his numbers do decrease, that's just because the opponent is going to be so heavily focused on him and expect other Vanderbilt playmakers and receivers to put up huge numbers if they decide to do that. Because I think Vanderbilt actually has the depth behind Will Shepard where that's also not a good option for opponents of Vanderbilt.
Jaden, yeah. London, Jr.
Is they don't Q, is what Will Shepard's doing.
Kamarion.
They don't have a choice anymore. They have to bracket Will Shepard. They have to double team Will Shepard. So now it's going to open up the field until they realize, oh shit, Vanderbilt has three or four other dudes that are also going to roast our second cornerback one-on-one. What do we do? And that's where this offense gives me hope for the future of this season, is that Vanderbilt has the ability to outscore teams. Before I get into the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to read out a few more guys than I did last game and give some credit to that defensive side of the ball. Langston Patterson was the leading tackler on the team with seven total tackles. and three solo tackles. C.J. Taylor was the second leading tackler, six total tackles, two solos. Kane Patterson tied with C.J. with six total tackles, with four tackles each. Jalen Mahoney, Miles Capers, Alex Brown, and Ethan Barr. And then we'll get into guys that have tackles for loss and sacks. Langston Patterson had one tackle for loss. Kane Patterson, one TFL. Alex Brown, one TFL. Bryce Cowan, half a TFL. Nate Clifton had one sack. Jeffrey Hugo had one sack as well late in the game. Good play by him.
Clifton also had an interception.
Yes, he did. Oh, that was an incredible play.
These
are the things you got to point out.
His first interception of his entire career. Like Pee-wee high school.
Really?
He said it on the post game with Andrew Allegretti. This is his first career interception in his entire life.
And I would say we should start doing our MVP or TDR MVP offensive and defensive.
I've already probably got it for
you. We'll do that at the end. We're going to start adding that into this after our three main takeaways. We're going to start doing our MVPs of the game on the offensive and defensive sides of the ball. I think that'll be an entertaining and controversial thing to add on to the end and maybe clip out. But, Trevor, I think it's time to get to the key plays of the game.
I agree. Before we get to the key plays, I'll just make this brief little comment. They have to stop putting Will Shepard at punt return. I get it. He's good. But, like, Jesus, dude, it just scares me. It scares me so much. I hate it.
I don't love it. Because of the injury risk, and he's so clearly your best playmaker on offense. However, you know who else returned punts? Earl Bennett, DJ Moore. I'm saying I agree with you. I hate seeing him back there receiving punts, but he's really damn good at it.
He's very good.
I can see why, if you watched practice day in, day out as a coaching staff, why you would keep Will Shepard as the punt returner. And he's done an incredible job when he's been back there. He had a good return against A&M again. I mean,
did he have one or two?
He had a couple good
ones. I think he had two. Yeah.
We're getting into my keys again, but it's so painful to watch him return punts, but damn,
dude, your whole body.
I'm also so comfortable that he's not going to muff the punt.
Well, do you think if we didn't have a Jonathan Crouse situation back in 2011 versus Arkansas, we would think this way?
No, I think we're
because
we're
I scarred. Think I think about that play every time I see him go. I think about that one play and it scares me so much.
Yeah, that's really what I think rattles through all Vanderbilt fans' heads immediately.
That one particular play is what, like, I think about it. I'm like, dear God, please just keep it. Like, do not let anybody
one of
touch
the dirtiest him. Hits in all of college football and consistently used for some reason.
That dude should have been put in jail.
That was horrific. Just, you know, I'm a big fan of big hits, but when a dude fair catches and then you decapitate him,
well, and he the ball dirty. Wasn't even the ball was still
in
the air.
Yeah, just horrendous. But Trevor, before we get into this quick recap of the key plays of the game and our three main takeaways and our TDR MVPs, it's time for the TDR cocktail break. Go ahead and grab yourself a cold one and we will be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back from your cocktail break. Hope you have a delicious cold beverage next to you, non-alcoholic or alcoholic. Trevor has just brought up a delicious beverage that we will be having at the next TDR tailgate in Lot 2. Trevor, tell the people what the opening beverage of the day will be for the Kentucky tailgate.
So we need to preface in that at Lot 2, we do get there like 8, 9 o'clock. Will and the boys are already setting up. Shout out to the boys, Miller, Shoal, all those guys, Tyler Shanks. Literally a bunch of the most gritty men ever. And we normally start off the day with mimosas. If you want to question our manhood because of that, I don't care. But I just brought to Will's attention something called a manmosa, which is instead of orange juice, it's champagne and Blue Moon. You cut up some fresh oranges, throw those in the bottle. And you have a manmosa, champagne and Blue Moon with some oranges.
So manmosas will be made available from 8 to 10 a.m. at the TDR tailgate in Lot 2. We will be drinking them probably a little bit too quickly and have a nice midday hangover again, just like the Alabama A&M game. But man,
I do not.
Matt, I'm the degenerate here. We all know.
I was just killing water, and I'm like, "Will, you good?" He's like, "I'm just ready for football, man.
I'm just ready to rock, brother. I'm just ready for 11 a.m. As your watch goes off, I'm just waiting for 11 a.m. kick. That's all I'm waiting on. That's when the day truly begins. Trevor, let's get into the key plays of the game. We're not going to do a full drive-by-drive breakdown anymore, but we are going to point out key plays. We went through some of them when we ran through the box score stat breakdown, but I do want to hit on the beginning of this game. Opening drive of the game for Alabama A&M, 20 plays, 71 yards, almost 9 minutes off the clock.
Disgusting.
Vanderbilt did stiffen up inside the 10 and force Alabama A&M into kicking a field goal, but it was pretty disgusting to watch Alabama A&M impose their will a little bit on this Vanderbilt defense early in the game. Uh-huh. How were you feeling after drive one?
I was feeling disgusted. So my dad has a Twitter. He listens to the pod. He's pretty active on Twitter. It's funny. I love my dad. He's an old man with a Twitter.
See, my dad's different because my dad will go on Twitter rants and I'm like, that's pretty good.
honestly, I love it when like my dad tweets, especially about the Reds, because he'll tweet something and I'll be like, Dad, I absolutely agree. Lucas Sims does suck right now, and he might cost us a wild card spot. But so he knows my whole, and then again, a lot of people think that like me in real life and me on my Twitter are two separate people. Sometimes that's true, but to be honest, the line does get a little blurry sometimes. So how I'm always on Twitter, I'm like, I'm always talking about the vibes. All the vibes are good. Can we get a vibe check right now? My dad leans over to me and he goes, son, before anybody else asks you, what are the vibes right now? And I just look at my dad and I go, Dad, please stop. And he just laughs. I'm like, Dad, I'm not joking. Please, just not now, Dad.
Our fathers are the most dangerous men on Twitter because they're middle-aged men on Twitter that actually make good, valid, indisputable points. And that is the kryptonite to those large blue checkmark accounts. Our people on Twitter, like our fathers, that are like 200 followers that are making better points than the sports journalists.
Yes.
So keep it up, old Steve. Absolutely legendary Twitter account. I changed he was the Steve Byram before I was the Will Byram.
If you're listening to this, follow our fathers on Twitter. Tommy Hewlin, Steve Byram. Follow them.
At the Steve Byram.
Dad's at Tommy Hewlin.
There we go. Just very, very creative and legendary Twitter handles.
Did you know what my dad's first name is? Just Tommy.
Just Tommy.
You know what his middle name is?
No.
He doesn't have a middle name. It's just Tommy.
He doesn't need one.
No. People are like, oh, is your name Thomas? He's like, no, it's just Tommy.
That's gritty.
That's like, what's your middle name? He's like, I don't have
one. Okay, but there's something about that. Okay, Tommy and just being named the name your parents were going to call you. So that's a funny story. So my full name is William. But from the beginning, my parents knew that I was going to go by Will. And that was the most nightmarish situation for the entire time that I was in school.
Because everybody's like, is William Byram?
Is William Byram? I go by Will every single place that I'm at. So they learned their lesson and actually just named my brother Drew.
So that's
Andrew, which they were going to
My brothers that. Go by their middle names. Their first names are Michael and Matthew, but they go by Tanner and Chase.
Okay. So this is a random tangent. Stop naming your kids something with their first name different than what you're going to call them the rest of their life. That is a curse that you do not need to put upon them.
You can just change your name now legally.
I don't want to do that.
You just don't want to go through the paperwork.
Nah, that seems like a lot of work.
This is the TDR difference, by the way. Last week we went on a rant about movies and TV, and now we're going on a rant about government names.
Government names, baby. All right. Then next possession, Vanderbilt drives down the field, gets a field goal, ties the game 3-3, then forces a 3-and-out for Alabama A&M, blocked punt. Great play by freshman Brian Longwell. Doors go up 5-3. First quarter ends 5-3.
Was that a scoreigami too? Did we ever confirm that? There's got to have been a game.
There has been a five to three. Yeah,
people like scoreigami, and I'm like, I feel like there's been enough defensive battles that's been a score.
Yeah, there's definitely been a 5-3 game before. But that got Vanderbilt a lot of not positive attention across the Twitterverse, the Xverse. with that score of saying, oh, I thought they were playing baseball. Oh, it's a baseball school.
Yeah. Hey, like, Brett McMurphy, you don't listen to this pod, but screw you, bozo.
Dude, this is the perfect example of what pisses me off about a lot of the sports media and the SEC and in college football is they will tweet out a score of Vanderbilt saying, and in SEC play, Vanderbilt leads Alabama A&M 5-3. Ha, ha, ha. They won't add the ha, 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 but it's given that they just tweet that out. And then you say, dude, shut up. What was the final score? And the response will be, I didn't even say anything about Vanderbilt. I just said what, and I'm like, yeah, but every single time you reference Vanderbilt is in a negative slant making fun of them. And you don't tweet out the final score that Vanderbilt ended up beating the shit out of Alabama A&M 47-13. Don't pander. Don't cheer for us if you don't like Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's in our villain era.
We don't want you to cheer for us. We want you to hate us.
Yeah. Heel J Will, great account on Twitter, is on board with
Jesus Christ, our neighbors, is it freaking the Royal Rumble upstairs? Good Lord.
Something.
Talk about Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, dude. Freaking the Great Khali's about to come through the ceiling right now. Good Lord.
This is the part that Vanderbilt fans are finally fighting back against. That is just the constant condescension of even the coverage given to Vanderbilt is given in a condescending way. Like, shut the fuck. Like, we don't need that. Like, leave us alone and just watch us build and grow and win and become what we are going to be. And that's where Vanderbilt fans are at right now.
I love that we truly are in our villain era.
Yeah, we're in the villain era right now. Vanderbilt then, after a couple more possessions, turnover on downs in that first quarter, second quarter. In the second quarter, Vanderbilt goes down, scores a touchdown, 12-3. We're not getting into details. But at halftime, the Doors lead Alabama A&M 12-3. How were you feeling at halftime, Trevor, after the first half performance that we saw?
I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. I went to the concessions to get a water, and I saw the big homie Riley, who works for Vanderbilt. Shout out Riley, go Reds! And I just looked at him in passing, and I go, "Bro, offense needs to get it going." Which, of course, he doesn't call play, he doesn't do anything. But I was like, "Dude, they need to do something. What the hell are we doing on offense right now?" It was just a bad first. There's no other way to put it. It was a really, really bad first half.
It was a really bad first half, and there's something to be said. I'm not making excuses for a bad first half. That we are sitting there disgusted at the performance that we are seeing out of Vanderbilt, and they're leading by two scores. There's something to be said for that, even though it is 12-3. Vanderbilt responded to your request, comes out with a great drive. First drive of the second half, Vanderbilt goes down six plays, 75 yards, goes up 19-3. And Alabama A&M immediately in two plays hits a 62-yard touchdown pass with Jalen Mahoney trailing behind the receiver. I don't know if it was a blown coverage or what it was, but that is the perfect symptom of the issues this secondary is having. This Alabama A&M team's passing attack is horrific. And just giving up one deep pass play is enough cause for concern for me. Alabama A&M tightens the score to 19-10. And from then on, Vanderbilt dominated the game. Mm-hmm. But 19-10, what did you see, if you saw anything, on that first Alabama A&M drive of the second half?
I just remember a ball being thrown in the air, and I just remember seeing 23 Jalen Mahoney like two steps behind. And I was just like, I just looked at my dad and I go, oh my God, it's happening again.
Well, the drive started for Alabama A&M with a Donovan Eagle and 11-yard run. And they were showing a replay.
He was kind of good.
He was very good. Alabama A&M's running back, Donovan Eagle, was as advertised, very good. Ran for 11. They were still showing a replay, and you could not see the far side of the field. I watched the broadcast over and over trying to see what happened. I couldn't see what happened on the broadcast. But somehow an Alabama A&M receiver was running unimpeded wide open through Vanderbilt secondary, and a good pass by their quarterback, 19-10. Then Vanderbilt stepped on A&M's throat. Punt from Vanderbilt, punt from A&M. Vanderbilt then goes down the field, eight plays, 57 yards, 3 minutes, 54 seconds, goes up 28-10. Vanderbilt then scores another touchdown, 33-10. Vanderbilt scores another touchdown, 40-10. Vanderbilt scores another touchdown, 47-10. And mixed in there was the Cedric Alexander show at running back. And he was outstanding, leading rusher on the team. And also what we referenced in the box score was the touchdown pass from Ken Seals to Cam Johnson on a beautifully designed play. First touchdown of many for Cam Johnson.
Career reception.
I think he's going. It was similar to London Humphreys, two freshmen with their first career reception being a touchdown catch. I think the future is bright, and that room is very talented at tight end and wide receiver in the future with Junior Sherrill, London Humphreys, and Kamarion Johnson.
Dude, can you just imagine Cam whenever he puts on 15 or 20 more pounds? Dude, he was fast. Like, I understand that it was a screenplay. Great job by the offensive line to get blockers in front, but he unhitched the trailer.
The only thing keeping Cam Johnson off the field is size. That's and he's going to put on weight.
But I think he's an underrated blocker. Like, when we've seen him block, like, he's held his own.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
I think we're in agreement that he's going to be a stud.
I think he should get more playing time.
I think Pimpton made a huge mistake going to LSU instead of Vanderbilt, committing to LSU instead of Vanderbilt, because that duo of Cameron Johnson and Pimpton could have been dynamic.
It would have been,
to say the least,
a
tight end with AJ Swan throwing the ball and the playmakers Vanderbilt currently has on the outside. Huge mistake from him, committing to a dying Brian Kelly LSU program. But Cedric
didn't even make the depth chart.
Cedric Alexander, Jesus Christ. Cedric Alexander was outstanding. He was better than advertised. I was about to say as advertised. He was better than we even expected. We wanted to see Ceddie Alexander on the field. We saw him, and he made highlight plays as we expected. I think the play of him jumping over the Alabama A&M safety went viral. We made a remix of it to the Drake Future Jumpman song, Jumpman, 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 them boys up to something. And that is for sure that the boys are up to something right now. But Trevor, that's pretty much the recap. Doors win 47-13. The second half was very dominant after a disappointing first half. I think it might be time to get into keys of the game. Takeaways of the game.
I do agree with you, though. Alabama A&M needs to be investigated by the gaming commission for that field goal.
There's no other explanation besides Alabama A&M and their head coach, Connell, I can't remember his last name, needs to be investigated. But Trevor, keys to the game, key takeaways from this Alabama A&M game. What's your number one key takeaway?
So the reason I didn't really speak on Ceddie so much during the first portion is because he is my key number one. Cedric Alexander, along with the freshmen, these freshmen are good. This group of freshmen are really, really, really good. Cedric Alexander should be running back number one. He should start. He has the burst. He has the vision. He has the speed. And another thing too, like I know that the hurdle, rightfully so, is what went viral, because that's a fantastic play. But his first touchdown, to where he dove under the tackle to sneak into the end zone, I mean, dude, what incredible awareness from a freshman running back. He's good. And so I think he should be the starting running back. I think his style of play fits this offense. I think he should be RB number one. But overall, man, the freshmen are good. Junior's good. London's good. I thought it was interesting when they put Junior and London back at punt return. And they both had big returns, which was wonderful to see. I know it was in garbage time, but to still see them do that was awesome. Same with Martell Height. He's good in coverage. He's really, really good. Tackling, not there yet, but also he's small. He's a freshman. Like, yeah, does missing tackle, is it frustrating? Yeah, absolutely it's frustrating. But that's going to come with more game experience. That's going to come as he puts on size. I'm okay with that right now. I say I'm okay with that until he misses a tackle for a touchdown, then I'm going to be pissed. But right now, go ahead and bookmark this even keel mindset right now. I'm okay with that because he's really, really good in coverage and just a great athlete. Had a great punt return from him. So just the freshmen are good. Demarion Thomas had a big play up the middle. He looked like a game wrecker. I would love to see more of him. But yeah, man. And just the young guys in general. I feel like Savion Riley has been really good at safety. Mm-hmm. DeRicky Wright, shout out to my boy D-Rock, my absolute favorite player on this whole entire Vanderbilt team. I love DeRicky Wright so much. Whenever he got hurt, I legitimately felt nauseous. And as I saw him just lurking in the Vandy tunnel waiting to come back, oh, I was an atomic bomb watching DeRicky come back. But I thought Marlon Sewell did really, really good in replacement for DeRicky. Bryce Cowan had a good game. Of course, we know what we got with Langston. He's great. And shout out to Trudell. Trudell's season finally arrived. He had a great, great defensive play to where whenever they were throwing it to the opposite, to the wide side of the field, and he stayed with his man, pushed his man out of bounds. So even if the catch did come down, as Phoebe is biting me on camera, why are you doing that? Even if the man comes back in bounds, he's already out of bounds, so it's an illegal catch. It's illegal touching. So he's a stud. The young guys are really, really good. Very excited about that. Grayson Morgan. Shout out to Grayson Morgan. Playing at right tackle for Junior Zebu as be a lady, Phoebe. I thought he held his own, maybe a little undersized still. Then again, it was against Alabama A&M, so maybe they are a little bit undersized as well. He had two procedural penalties, but I thought overall, I thought he had a great game. So the young guys are very exciting, and those are my key number one, already making contributions to the team.
So last week, my keys started out with number one being positive, and the rest of my takeaways were negative. This week's going to be the opposite. My number one key takeaway is going to be negatively slanted. My two and three key takeaways are going to be more positive, but things that I think legitimately will carry over to the rest of the season. So I think that's a key little asterisk I like to put on it. Not just things for the future, but things that we're going to recognize this year. So my number one key takeaway is question marks still remain. The same question marks still remain. If you just never showed me and I never watched the first two games of this season during this preseason preview, when I named off the issues and questions that I had about this team, they are the exact same after the first two games of this season. Can the secondary be decent enough to allow the pass rush to even have an opportunity to make an impact and even be a broken dam for opponents' passing attacks? So far, the secondary has shown me nothing. Absolutely nothing. I think the secondary is horrendous. The same question marks remain. Can Vanderbilt get true pressure? We expect them to get true pressure. We haven't seen this defensive line at full health. We haven't seen this linebacking group at full health. We haven't seen Prince Colley. We haven't seen Darren Agoo. We haven't seen Davion Davis. So
Christian James.
Haven't seen Christian James. So can this defensive line create true impactful pressure? And number three, does Vanderbilt really have a good offensive line, or were they assisted by having two de facto assistant offensive linemen in Ben Bresnahan and Gavin Schoenwald making up for the mistakes that this offensive line made all last year? And so far, I have nothing that tells me that this offensive line is legit. So far. Okay, I'm not saying I have anything that tells me that they're going to be awful either or below our expectations, but I've seen nothing that makes my issues that I brought up before the season and makes me feel any better about them. I thought the offensive line would be good. So far, they've shown me nothing that this is going to be anything better than a normal, traditional, shitty Vanderbilt offensive line. We will know more about these question marks after the Wake Forest game. It's why I'm not saying these question marks have been confirmed, but these question marks do remain. So that's my key takeaway. Number one is we haven't really learned anything about this team, to be honest. This team is pretty much exactly what we expected after analyzing the roster and analyzing what we saw in fall camp, and we will learn a lot more after this upcoming Wake Forest game. So, Trevor, I don't think there's really much controversial things that I said in that. It's pretty much what we discussed before the season. Question marks are still there, but what's your key number two?
Yeah, and I think that's the beautiful dichotomy of this pod is I think naturally, my disposition is to be a little bit more optimistic. And so I think we balance each other out in that. But I agree. I think offensive line play has left something to be desired. Secondary not just has left something to be desired. It's left everything to be desired. I mean, safety play has been good. I'm okay with safety play. Specifically, cornerback play has been not good. I think whenever Martell is in for Tyson Russell, he's been really good. BJ Anderson hasn't really given me a whole lot to be upset about so far. Of course, everything is subject to change. I thought BJ's actually had two fairly decent games. And I think people hate on him too much. I really do. I think, was he great last year? No, he would tell you that he wasn't great. But I think a lot of the times he's honestly a scapegoat for people that just don't know ball.
Yeah, I think the Wake Forest game is going to answer questions.
Yes,
so absolutely. I think that any hot takes, positive or negative. So this is what was driving me crazy reading the boards after the game, is everybody wants to have immediate reactions and takes. I just, in my heart of hearts, think I've learned absolutely nothing about this team through the first two games. I think this is I've changed zero opinions from what I had before I'd ever seen this team take a live snap. So that's what's been weird. Vanderbilt's 2-0. My questions and concerns still remain the same, and my positive feelings about the wide receiver group and about AJ Swan and about possibly this linebacking core being solid still remain that in that direction of maybe they can be pretty solid. I just don't know. We don't have answers. We haven't seen dominant performances, but we've seen wins, and we've seen them turn it on when they needed to. And the only guys that I can say have at least lived up to the hype, and now I'm no longer concerned about, the receiver group is legit, and AJ Swan is legit. I don't care what the stats or QBR show from this A&M game. He's the real deal after seven starts and looking as confident and calm as he does. I watched a lot of college football this weekend, and I watched a lot of quarterbacks look very uncomfortable in the pocket, looked very uncomfortable in the scheme, and looked like they did not have a command of the offense they were controlling. AJ Swan looks in command and in control, and I have confidence he can make an accurate throw pretty much anywhere on the field.
Yeah. And I think too, even on the defensive side of the ball, I think, like you said, with receivers and Swan, I think we know what we have in CJ. We know what we have in DeRicky. Mm-hmm. That's,
you know what you have in Devin Lee?
I think Devin Lee can still sort of be a, I think you know what you have in Nate Clifton.
DeCosmo. He's been very solid. He's a guy that, he hasn't made any incredible plays. He's been very quiet. But when we went back and watched that A&M game,
he's honestly kind of impressive.
He's impressed me quite a bit.
But yeah, I agree with you. They leave a lot to be desired. So for my take number two, I get that it's Hawaii, and I get that it's Alabama A&M, and maybe you don't want to put a lot of things on tape. Maybe you don't want to get experimental. But the defensive scheme makes no sense to me, dude. Like, and this is an issue that I had last year with lack of pressure, lack of blitzes being brought. I get it. Every defensive coordinator wants to bring pressure with just three and four guys. I get it. In an ideal world, that's awesome. But we do not live in an ideal world to where you can get pressure with just three or four guys 100% of the time. You have to dial up pressure. You have to dial up blitzes. And Vanderbilt is just does not seem like they're bringing pressure with their linebackers. It seems like they're very content with dropping seven or eight in coverage, which, I mean, I get that if you do have true concerns with the secondary, you want to drop more into coverage to be able to compensate for the lack that you might have in the back end. But dear God, dude, like, and this is what's so frustrating, and we talked about this before the pod even started. During SEC Media Day, somebody asked about the defensive scheme for Vanderbilt, and Clark Lee said, yeah, Nick Howell is an aggressive coordinator. He wants to blitz 30 or 40% of the times, but Clark's not that comfortable with it. They're just not blitzing. They're not even blitzing 20% of the time. Like, they're so content with dropping into coverage. And yeah, that's fine. But you have a quarterback who's willing to just stand in the pocket all day long and let his receivers find the pockets in the zone. And it doesn't make sense to me. Dial up some pressure, Nick. Like, just let the boys run downhill. Let Ethan run downhill. Let Kane run downhill. And if somebody gets burnt, Who the hell cares? Because we're dropping 7 or 8 in coverage and still getting burnt. So, dude, like, let your nuts hang. Play with your hair on fire and just send the boys to the quarterback. I don't get it. So that's my key takeaway number two, is probably not just for this game, but just for the first two games overall, is the defensive scheme it just doesn't make any sense to me.
As Phoebe walks across my laptop, she's fine. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the scheme and everything, because I don't have any scheme issues in my key takeaways, because I am still banking. And it's not that I don't have any issues with the scheme we've seen on offense or defense. I'm still banking that they are keeping things off film. And I'm not, and I know you gave that preface, but I'm still banking that a lot of their blitz packages on defense specifically, a lot of their exotic coverages and having CJ in playmaking positions, that they've been saving that for this Wake Forest game, for the most key game of the year. Same thing with the offense. I've held back a lot of issues I've had with any play calling or any scheme stuff and been too critical there, because I understand that you want to keep things off film. It's something I think Hawaii did a horrible job of, is they showed everything they had on film against Vanderbilt, and you saw that against Stanford. You saw that Stanford was prepared for every new facet and wrinkle that Hawaii had implemented, because they showed everything against Vandy. And I think that's having Timmy Chang in his second year versus Clark Lee in his third year, as Clark's learned from mistakes. And I think you're going to see them open up exotic blitz packages, open up this offense against Wake Forest. And if not, that will be one of my key takeaways after this Wake Forest game, if you don't see more blitz packages.
Yeah, and that's even something I said last week. What was one of my keys, is like, dear God, man, just bring some pressure. Just let them go downhill, especially too, when you know you're going up against, I think Alabama A&M ended up playing 3 different quarterbacks.
Xavier Langford and that Cornelius Brown guy.
And the Langford guy was the guy that came in second string, right?
No, he was first
string. Sorry, then it's the Cornelius guy. He was
number 10.
He's the one that threw the bomb.
Cornelius Brown was the one that threw the pick. Cornelius Brown was 7 for 12 for 30. Yeah, you're getting him mixed. You're getting him back. You're getting him mixed up. I'm having trouble connecting to the internet. Alexa just went off. If you could hear that,
that's the TDR difference, baby.
Phoebe did not like that at all.
No, Phoebe's like, who is?
This is the high production quality. So Xavier Langford was the starter, number 16. Cornelius Brown was number 10. The UT Martin transfer that was the backup.
But still, even though, like, you know, you're like, okay, these guys probably don't want to throw, dude. Just bring some pressure, stack the box. Like, come on.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement, and I will begin. And I've never been soft on coaching staffs, regardless of the sport. So once we see Wake Forest and see the game plan for Wake Forest, I will be hypercritical of the game plan due to my lack of criticality thus far throughout the season. But my key number two and key takeaway number two is something that's going to carry over throughout the rest of the season. You brought up how ill it made you when Will Shepard returned punts. Not saying I disagree, but this team has playmakers on special teams. Special teams playmakers, something Vanderbilt has not had in years, that was a staple of Vanderbilt, is having dudes at returner positions. That is so big for a team like Vanderbilt that struggles with big plays and putting together drives. That's what they struggled with last year. Every single time Jaden McGowan catches a kick, it has the potential to go back. He almost took one back on the opening kickoff from Alabama A&M. He got tackled by the kicker, and you could see his frustration afterwards. Having a dynamic returner for Vanderbilt is 2 or 3x as important as every other SEC team, because Vanderbilt just does not traditionally have explosive playmakers. And this year, punt return, kick return, they have them. Jaden McGowan is the best returner Vanderbilt has had since Darius Sims, probably the best they have had, in my opinion, since Warren Norman at punt returner. I know it makes me sick, but since probably what, DJ Moore, maybe? I think Will Shepard's probably the best punt returner that they've had. It makes me ill, because he is the wide receiver number one, but he's really good at it. Like, that's the main problem I think the staff is facing, is like, yeah, you don't want to put your best offensive playmaker catching punts, but damn, he's also probably like a top 10 punt returner in the country. So it's like potential to have that, but also he's also a top 10 wide receiver in the country, in my opinion. So it's a balancing act, but Vanderbilt has playmakers on special teams. And I'm talking about the return game, but punting has been good. It's been solid. And so far, there's been no high-pressure kicks, but Bercilla looked confident and made both his kicks.
Bercilla,
whatever. I don't care if I'm pronouncing it right or wrong. He made his kicks.
Shout out to Jake. 100% on the year.
Yeah, so keep making your kicks, but Vanderbilt has playmakers in the return game, which is huge as Vanderbilt starts playing better talent.
Well, dude, not just in the return game, but shout out to Coach Lustig. Overall, the special teams boys have been playing a blocked punt game, yep. Like with Brian Longwell. Like, he's got those special teams is kind of humming now.
I almost want to extend that out to all of special teams.
I think you should.
Yeah, outside of that horrible 2-point conversion they tried to run against Hawaii to open up the season, special teams has been very solid.
Well, did you notice during the Alabama A&M game on one of the extra point conversions, they came out in that formation and it scared the hell out of me. They came out in that same formation and then brought everybody together and kicked the field goal. And I just remember looking at my dad and I was like, Dad, what are they doing?
Like, okay, that's one of those things, definition of we've watched a lot of football and we know how film sessions work. I understand you were trying to get that on film so that then you could potentially use it later on. But my God, that was horrible.
I still don't understand why they did that.
No, that's one of the definition of one of those things that looks amazing during practice. That when you're running against your scout team, special teams, and they kind of know what to expect and how to react naturally, that it looks really good. Mm-hmm. But in real live action, real live speed, I'm glad they got that out of their system during week zero, game one against Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Key number three, Trevor.
This isn't really a key number three. It's just a general takeaway I had is, and we'll talk about Swan again. I said he looked okay. I'm saying that because he had a really good second half. But that first half was probably his worst, his worst football he's had in his career at Vanderbilt so far. That first half, he was not good. Just couldn't find guys, made ill-advised throws, just looked super uncomfortable. Of course, he got it turned on in the second half, made some big plays. But I don't want to hate on the kid too much because, like we said, this was only, I believe, his seventh career start. And this is going to come with time. Like, I understand you don't want to throw interceptions in the end zone. That's, like, worst-case scenario. But, I mean, he was going to make a bad play eventually. He's young. He's still learning. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it being against Alabama A&M, like you said. Now, if it's against Wake Forest, we're going to lose games because of stuff like that. So, my takeaway from number three from the game was that he just looked okay. But then again, man, whenever he looks okay, he still makes some of the craziest throws that we have ever seen. And, like, he just makes some, like, really, oh, wow, like, how did he do that throws that we just haven't seen from a Vanderbilt quarterback in a long time.
Yeah, I don't have any long season concerns for Swan. I
absolutely agree.
I still think he's the guy. He didn't look great this game. I'm not sugarcoating it. I think he would also say he did not play great against Alabama A&M. They're going to tighten those things up. I think he has the talent. And I think he has the control of this offense that's not going to be a concern for the rest of the season. But I completely agree. My key number three is your key number one. My key number three is Cedric Alexander has something. He has something special. And we were excited to see him as a freshman running back. And he got on the field and looked every bit like an RB1. It's one of my favorite adjectives to use. Or is it an adverb? I think it's an adverb. Slippery. It is an adverb. He looked slippery. I know it's Alabama A&M. I know it is. I know it's an FCS opponent. I know it was in the second half. I know the game was already decided. I know all of this. But Patrick Smith and Chase Gillespie and Newberry, no offense to Newberry because he's a freshman as well, those guys have not looked slippery at all the entire season against anyone. On top of the vision, you already pointed that out. On top of the hitting the hole quickly, he also just slipped out of defenders' hands. There's no other description I can use. It's what Alvin Kamara had at Tennessee. He's just slippery. And that's just being an elite level athlete and playmaker. So I agree with you on your point number one and key takeaway number one is Cedric Alexander needs real time, real carries, and he really needs to be pushing for for that RB1 job if they're actually evaluating these guys on in-game performance. Because so far, Patrick Smith and Chase Gillespie just have not gotten the job done. They haven't been awful, but they haven't been that playmaker that you need out of the backfield if you're Vanderbilt to mix up that passing game that does have playmakers. You need somebody like what freaking Cedric Alexander looked like, that he can make those plays when given the opportunity. And how much of the issues with the running game have been from the offensive line? You brought up this point, have been offensive line, or have been Patrick Smith and Chase Gillespie just not having the vision to hit the hole? I think it's been a combo of both. So far, I think there's a lot to prove in the running game. There's something special with this Cedric Alexander kid, and I don't think that's the last time you're going to be hearing his name called and the foghorn going off inside of First Bank Stadium.
I absolutely agree. I'm right there with you. I want to see Cedric Alexander starting against Wake Forest. I think so far through two games, particularly the Alabama A&M game, he's shown you that the kid's got something. You know what I mean? And he needs to – I totally agree. He needs to be getting real – crucial in-game reps. And I think he should be the starting running back.
Absolutely. I think it's the same thing when you saw CJ Taylor truly get reps on defense and you went, that guy's different. He's just different. He just is. It's unexplainable. It's just, that's the definition of what Clark Lee was talking about as guys we weren't even really talking about as key contributors before the season. And by game six or seven, they could be starters and being studs and key players in the outcome of a game. I think that's Cedric Alexander this season for Vanderbilt.
Well, I think too, London is one of those kids. I think London is one of those kids as well. Your key number three.
That was my key number three.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Now we're on to our offensive and defensive TDR MVPs.
Do we also want to do Twitter questions too?
Yes, we do want to go to Twitter comments here, but let's first get out our offensive, defensive MVPs. We've already kind of gone over. I think they'll be pretty obvious. We did not prepare for this at all, so I'll go first. My offensive MVP is pretty obvious. It's going to be Will Shepard. I know he had the one drop. You can have somebody different. I know he had the one drop that he misjudged the ball that Swan threw. It wasn't an awful ball by A.J. Swan by any stretch. It wasn't a perfect ball by A.J. Swan. Other than that, Will Shepard was once again absolutely unguardable and had two incredible catches in the corner of the end zones. So Will Shepard's my offensive MVP.
Yeah, not much needs to be said. Will Shepard's my offensive MVP as well.
On to my defensive MVP, which is a little bit tougher. I'm going to go with another obvious guy. Because I don't know if you're going to go with him. CJ Taylor was everywhere. Watching that film, when he was on the field, he was the best player on the defense, flying around. He wasn't the leading tackler, but he was the most impactful player on that defense. So CJ Taylor is my defensive MVP of the game.
I agree, but can I give an honorable MVP?
Absolutely.
I'm gonna go big man Nate Clifton.
There we go.
with his intercept. I'm gonna go Nate Clifton, a leader on that defensive line, captain of the defense, got a crucial turnover. I don't know if crucial is but a turnover nonetheless. All turnovers are crucial, I guess. But he looked awesome. He's gonna be my you know what, I'll just say it. He's my MVP of the game, of the defensive game.
Okay, so Nate Clifton for Trevor, CJ Taylor for me, but pretty obvious, I think, there. I think those will get a little more controversial as the season goes on and a little bit better of a segment, but we will get on to the Twitter comments. We asked the question, how are you feeling after the 2-0 start for Vanderbilt? We got some good replies. First up, we have Justin Kemp, also left a great review, I think, on iTunes. He said, I'm still optimistic. I think they opened up the playbook more last game and found a gem in Alexander. The game this week is massive, and I feel like we're going to win or lose by 20. It'll depend on if our D-backs can maintain and not give up home run plays. Damn.
I mean, that's a pretty spot on. I don't know how you disagree. I'm with Justin, though. I still am a little bit optimistic because I sort of viewed these first two games as like preseason games. I know that's a terrible way to view it, but Clark Lee and the coaching staff knows that this is, of course, they're not going to say it to the media. They're going to be like, oh, it's just another game, yada, yada, yada. That's just coach speak. They know that this is a huge game for them. Like, this is how should I say this? This would be another God, how do I say? Like a state, like this would be another staple win for Clark Lee to show that there is, like, this would tangible be up there. Progress. This would be up there with the Kentucky and the Florida game as, oh, they're doing something. You know what I'm saying?
Also, it sets up Vanderbilt for an electric home atmosphere against Kentucky, because they theoretically should go on the road and beat UNLV and be 4-0 going into conference play in the SEC with Kentucky at home, with all the storylines that are also already there.
Before we go on to the next one, I'll ask you, because you're the betting man, what do you think about the line?
Vanderbilt opened as a, what, 13.5, 12.5 point underdog?
13. On Action Network, they were 14.
It was more than I expected. I was kind of surprised. I thought Vanderbilt would be more like a 9.5, 10.5 point underdog. It was a little bit more than I thought. I think you'll see that line drop. I think it already has dropped. I think we had this conversation last night before that had happened. I said the same thing. I don't think it'll push below 10.5. I think 10 is the lowest you'll see it go. But it's a little higher than I would have thought, to be honest. I think Vanderbilt's secondary concerns against that Wake Forest slow mesh, high-powered offense, even after losing Hartman and their best receiver, I think that has Vegas pushing towards Wake. And I don't agree with it. I think it's a little too high, but I can see why Vanderbilt's almost a 2-touchdown underdog. And also some very cheap points in between 10 and 13.5. Those are the cheapest points in all of sports. So, but getting on to more comments, Will Weingart at Will Weingart said, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably not. Said, weight game will determine the rest of this year. That's what we've said this podcast.
Yep. That is the official statement of TDR.
100% in agreement. Miller McKee, the lot lizard.
we'll go ahead and just say says, who it is.
Miller McKee says, still unsure if we play to our competition. But if we do, that's not a good look on the culture being built. Next week, we'll show what we are made of. I kind of agree, but I don't agree with the culture.
Agree with the culture aspect.
But I do think next week we'll answer a lot of these questions. Right now is truly a talking week. I mean, we will know a ton more in 6 days after this Wake Forest game with the 10 a.m. Central kickoff.
The season starts this Saturday.
It really does. And it's a good sign that we can say that Vanderbilt fans are not ecstatic at a 2-0 start. It's just, you looked at the schedule, you saw Hawaii, and you saw Alabama A&M, and you said 2-0. And Vanderbilt went out and went 2-0. And I think that, in and of itself, as sad as it sounds, is progress. So, from the anchor man, he says, still nervous AF because the real season starts this weekend. Exactly what you just said.
That's not my burner, I promise.
Not his burner. Jordan,
I don't have a burner.
George Barclay said, I feel good about the athleticism of this team and their ability to stay in games. We have the size and speed and different weapons that we've lacked in years past.
I also think that is a fair point.
I think there is a big step up. It's very prevalent when you just watch this team, even against lesser competition, that Vanderbilt's the more athletic team. Vanderbilt looks more like an SEC team than they have in years. And that in and of itself is progress. So there are a lot of GIF reactions, a lot of meme reactions, a lot of people saying, that was a majority of the responses was, I don't know. And here at TDR, I can proudly say, I also don't know. And I think we'll get into it more in the Wake Forest preview, digging into Wake Forest. There are issues. There are things to be concerned about. But really, until you see this team play another Power 5 opponent, it's really hard to make any determinations about the rest of this very, very long college football season.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think there are some things that you do know, particularly with the freshmen. I think the freshmen certainly have already made an impact. I think they can continue to make an impact. I think you know what you have in Swan. I think you know what you have in individual players like CJ, DeRicky, so on and so forth. Another thing this weekend will be massive for Vanderbilt is getting Darren Agu back.
Yep.
Get Darren Agu back on that, back on the edge, move Issa Wataha back inside to his natural position. When Christian James comes back, we do not know. I've been told that it's, quote, soon-ish. That could be this week. It could be 2 weeks from now. Who knows? But
Who knows? But we do know we will be back later this week for a Wake Forest preview. It will be a beefy episode, and it will be a hell of a weekend, even though it is a 10 a.m. I repeat, 10 a.m. Central Time kickoff for Vanderbilt at Wake Forest. For myself, Will Byram, and my co-host Trevor Hoolan, this has been episode 235 of The Door Report, powered by Corey Perkins of Parks Realty. Anchor down.
Go Doors.